Football on Off the Ball.
Some were bought for a system, but Manchester United are trying to bring players in that can play multiple systems so that when a manager leaves, the whole club isn't rocked. And I actually agree with that idea.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Racing Pod
on Off the Ball
with William Hill. 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
And you are welcome to episode 114 of The Racing Pod on Off the Ball with John Duggan and Johnny Ward. Remember, we're here every week with analysis, race previews, tips, stories, interviews, a bit of crack as well. Reminder, folks, the full Off the Ball Racing Pod is now free wherever you get your podcasts. How are you, Johnny?
Very well, JD.
This week's big news, Harry Cobden is going to be, from next season, the new National Hunt retained jockey for owner JB McManus. Harry Cobden, 27 years of age, champion jockey in England a couple of seasons ago, has been riding for Paul Nicholls for years and has the big job now in the green and gold with Mark Walsh and Nico de Boinville, having been the riders mainly in Ireland and England for JP. So, look, he's young and he's a very talented rider, so you can see the logic.
You can, yeah. I suppose JP McManus was reputed to have said, imagine all the fish that would be alive today if they kept their mouth shut in relation to, you know, people talking about information at the racetrack and all of that. My counter to that would be to JP that, like, unless the fish opens his mouth sometimes, he's not going to eat. So we do have to talk. Now, the McManus operation is not a talking operation. It's JP's success in the bettering over the years. And I was looking at a horse tomorrow. He has an 11-year-old horse running who's having his seventh season, who's never run a race. And the amount of money he must spend on his horses. And it's just been his way with the years. He doesn't really give interviews. The McManus operation. Frank Berry gives short interviews after the race in Ireland. But generally, there's no... like, you see Daryl Jacob for Maneer and Suede now, like, given kind of their side of stuff going on. And it's quite interesting. The McManus operation has never been like that. So I think what happened here, and I'm kind of speculating a bit, was that there was a rumour that got out, and Paul Nicholls was asked about it. And they probably got to the point where they had to kind of say that, yeah, this is likely the plan. Because I think in an ideal world, I was thinking about this today, like, if Mark Walsh were told, you know, we're going to replace you at the end of the season with Harry, Mark Walsh would not tell anyone that. Like, he's a very, very...
loyal soldier.
Very loyal soldier. Mark is 100% one of the good guys in racing. Should never be forgotten what he did with Mark Enright when Mark needed help and all of that. And Mark spoke about that. Mark's one of the good guys. But he would have been, loyal to the operation and would have probably have said... Okay, like I'm...
But he's 40 this year.
I'm 39 going on 40.
Mark Walsh, and he's in one piece. And
you know, in my view, and I'm not a great judge necessarily of jockeys, but in my view, Mark Walsh is well up there with the best jockeys we've had in Ireland this century. I've always thought he was excellent. But he's kind of generally been playing... the substitute a bit towards a Barry Geraghty or a McCoy or whatever. And he's come in and he had his role... And now he's kind of, you know, he's been the top jockey in Ireland, but I suppose he is 39. And, you know, I was doing another podcast on Monday, JD, and this broke, I would say, a few minutes before we went to record it. And I suppose at the time, I'd heard the rumours, and maybe I didn't think it was the biggest news story, but Richie Forrestal then did an article in the Racing Post that was really hard-hitting in terms of, like...
Yeah, I thought it was a bit... I wouldn't really have agreed. My thinking about it was... There's two things I thought about it. First of all, JP McManus and the operation is going nowhere because you think JP's in his 70s now. You think maybe, you know, were they going to be here in 10, 20 years' time? Will they lose interest in racing? Obviously not. If Harry Cobden is the new kid on the block and he's going to be there for a decade. And second of all, Mark Walsh is turning 40. So most jockeys don't get to 40 over jumps. So I kind of felt, look, I just think it's a natural cycle of things is my reading of it.
I don't know. Richie's article was definitely hard-hitting. I feel it could have been dealt with better. Now, I'm not sure Mark Walsh's side of it, and we'll say, like, Frank Berry was very much the one that moulded him. I'm not sure that side of the McManus operation and the Mark Walsh, side of the McManus team. I'm not sure they're all that happy with it. I just don't know. And I'm trying to read between the lines here. And I'd say there is a little bit of ill feeling that this is happening now. And like the use of the term dead man walking might be a little bit over the top, but I can see why Mark would be disappointed. But at the same time, Harry Cobden is 27. He's available and it does make a lot of sense. And from a professional perspective and a selfish perspective, I love him coming over to Ireland to ride now. So I like Ryan Moore coming over to ride for Aidan, and it's going to add a lot of... intrigue, but I do feel that Mark Walsh, I mean, I, I, I can't imagine this is in response to the rides he's given, say.
Not at all.
It can't be.
It's surely about the fact that he's turning 40.
I would have thought so. And Harry Cobden is, as you say, at his prime. Seems to be kind of a laid-back character that'll be suited
and
to
also,
the operation.
And also, what about England? What about Nicky Henderson's yard? Nico De Boinville? Yeah. What's the impact there going to be?
Yeah, and what's the impact going to be, say, for sort of Paul Nicholls as well? You know, so what's Harry Cobden going to be doing? You know, he obviously will have to ride for McManus, but then, Paul Nicholls will have a fancied horse in the same card. What's going to happen with Nico? Like, I do think Nico is probably lucky enough in terms of where he ranks in terms of the really good jockeys. The opportunities he's had, I think he's a loyal kind of guy to the operation, and like, he's a decent rider, but he's definitely no Mark Walsh. I personally, I've said this before, JD, I don't feel owners need jockeys. I don't feel they need them at all. If Keith Donoghue would be perfectly well able to ride, I know the way you're thinking, and the lads that are riding them at home all the time.
What do you mean by this, owners don't need jockeys?
I don't think owners need retained jockeys. Like, I feel that, say, like Jig and Sound now, basically, you know, anyone can ride their horses, who's ever the stable rider. So if it's Jack Kennedy, if it's Paul Townend, that's fine. Whoever the stable jockey is, he or she can ride the horse. We don't need our own jockey. Now, most people probably disagree with me on that. They have to be paid a retainer, decent money. That's not an issue for JP McManus. Wouldn't have been an issue for Jigginstown. But it kind of complicates matters a bit, because is the jockey riding the horse at home all the time when he's to ride for 25 different yards?
I just remember the Grand National 2004, Amberley House won, and Clan Royale should have won the race, didn't win the race, whether it was the jockey or other factors, and McCoy was then signed, and McCoy won the Grand National for them, and that was the race JP wanted to win more than any other. So I could see he's the best, let's get the best.
Yeah.
So I could understand that, and I think the thing with Cobden is, and also Jamie McManus has had more horses with William Mullins now than he would have had in previous years. He's the best, let's get the best.
Yeah, and I doubt Willie Mullins is generally that happy with like Paul Townend having to give up rides for retain, but that it is what it is.
Now, he has ridden I Am Maximus to win the Grand National, but you'd wonder next year if they've got a nice up-and-comer.
Who knows?
Who's going to ride it?
The other thing I should point out, JP's in his mid-70s, right? I'm not sure exactly who's making the big calls or who's his lieutenant operation.
But what it says now is that they're going to be here for the foreseeable, and they're going to be, because Rich Ritchie, to me, and I don't know of any evidence, but it seems like Rich Ritchie's involvement is not as strong as it was in the game.
Yeah, and there's not like an obvious heir apparent or whatever. McManus seems to be, like, JP's been involved for, what, 50-odd years now at this stage in some shape. And it's just interesting that, like, there might be more lieutenants coming up, kind of being part of that operation. But as I say, he doesn't give interviews, so it's a lot of speculation.
They win at Cheltenham, you might say a few things, but generally not before.
But and I mean,
I think it's about getting the best. I mean, like, look at McCoy, Garrity. They won all big races, nationals, champion hurdles, and they were, I think as well, they were good public faces for the green and gold operation.
Yeah, they were. I've very mixed views on the whole McManus operation, but like the positives from my perspective is like the 11-year-old horse tomorrow, he's incredibly loyal to trainers. He gives so many small trainers a chance, like, and has to be hemorrhaging money on training fees at various different yards. For what, I'm not really sure. I think a lot of it is genuine altruism where he's giving something back.
Yeah.
You know, we've
and also getting young trainer like Edward Harty, Captain Seabee, didn't have many horses in the yard.
Absolutely.
At Cheltenham winner. Gavin Cromwell has now trained a champion hurdle and a Gold Cup
and
winner.
Say Conor King. So he bought Oscar's brother from, like, Oscar's brother was partly owned by Conor's dad, who literally sourced two horses for Connor and Daniel, basically mainly Connor, and they were good. But Connor's, and I think his aunt was involved, but JP McManus bought the horse, but it's staying in the yard. And that, like, that's a big thing. So that part of the operation, I think, he's very loyal.
I can't believe in John Bond for this Clarence House chase at Ascot on Saturday, 3:30, has won over $1 million in prize money for JP McManus and the other connections. 18 wins and 7 second places. Never been out of the top two.
It's funny what we were talking about there, because in terms of, you know, the way like all that money was spent on our Connor back in the day, and there's this kind of, I suppose we have a history of massive money paid for ready-made National Hunt horses. John Bond cost 570,000 sterling in 2020, which was mad money. He's won a lot more than that since.
Yeah.
So he is one of the anomalies, and he's not a superstar, but he's just a moneymaker.
I don't think he wins this though. Ile de Tance, right, has become the real deal now for Willie Mullins. Won his last 5 starts. He's put it all together. 2 miles right-handed is bread and butter. I do think Gidley Park might not win now this race, but Gidley Park is a horse I think will turn up in a big race, because He's £16 to final with Elette Tons in the Clarence House Chase at Ascot, but a drop back and trip might suit him. He's beaten Caldwell Potter in the Jukebox Man in his career. He was second in a decent grade one at Aintree last season. Whether he wins this or not, he is a horse, I think, that has got something in him.
Yeah, he might finish second. There isn't an awful lot between the other three in the betting. And I think even for four runners, this race is really fascinating, even with an odds-on favourite. And the place that I'll nearly start, JD, is Thistle Ask. And
I don't understand. How can a horse be up £50 in a year?
He changed yards. And like the Racing Post, I thought it was a great story, great idea for a story. They interviewed the former owners of the horse, who basically had an option, will we sell him? Because James Ewart, I think, was getting out of the game, their trainer. So they were like, will we hold on to him? He was 8 years of age. Will we hold on to him or will we sell him? They sold him. He won off 115. He's now rated 158. And it's one of those things, like, you don't get the story of, oh my God, like, they must be watching it through. Like, often you're obviously happy when your horse does well subsequent to you selling them, but they must be looking at this thinking, what if? Because they made a decision, they weren't sure, but they made a decision to sell him, and he's gone on to amazing things now.
What's his ceiling?
Well, that's the thing.
I don't know.
You know, the last day he won.
He's a wild card.
He's thriving. Dan Skelton's an excellent trainer. He's the only danger, I think, here to... I'm not sure he's the danger, but I can see the other two beating him. John Bond has no chance of beating Elette Tons.
John Bond is a lay.
Like, he just cannot beat him on this year's form. I think I tipped him the last day on the basis of price. He couldn't get near him, so he can't beat him. And I think you made a good point there. Elette Tons has become the real deal, and there's no real deal in this race unless Thistle Ask can somehow maintain his progress. He still has £14 to find with the favourite. And Willie's reports of Willie's being out of form, I think, have been greatly exaggerated.
Although, absolutely, wait till you get to the spring festivals. And that's the big one at Ascot on Saturday, the Clarence House Chase. Just in terms of the Navan handicap hurdle tomorrow, 120, that's the big race at Navan, 2.5 miles, 13 runners. Zanoush was interesting for me, a progressive type for Colin Murphy, who's back training now, coming off the back of a victory at Punchestown. I think there's more to come from her. Grancia de Say in the Barry Connell colours, up £4 for a second place finish at Leopardstown, behind the Naga Reedy, who's also in this race and could be revitalised back over hurdles after a spell of offences. This horse is 9 years of age, but Zanoush was the one that I caught the eye of Zanoush.
I'm at Navan tomorrow, like a few horses, and I actually thought this race was one of the more perplexing. Son of Anarchy, he's given a mark of 128. What you would have liked from Son of Anarchy is stick with the process, who was third. Like, he ran no sort of race yesterday, so you really want to see him give some sort of context to the form. He got, £10 for that victory. I'm just not sure what that form amounts to. And then at the bottom of the weights, I wouldn't put it past Aya Connect to go on and win this. It would be a reluctance.
11 years of age?
Yeah, he's not that long with Ian Donoghue, who's just a splendid, splendid local trainer. And has given
Keith's brother
and Ross, the younger brother, who's a lot younger than the two of them. He's been a big cog in the operation as well. And it's lovely to visit the yard. And he's given Cara Monaghan a chance as well. Cara rode this horse, a rare... was chase ride for her. I fancied him at Down Royal. He was actually weak in the betting in the end, but he's run off 100 considering his chase form wasn't bad, and he won easily. Now this is different off 112, but he runs well around Navan, and I could see him at least getting into the first three
at Ascot. The other race there on Saturday, good to soft in place, is the going, the 2.5 mile handicap chase at 220, 9 runners in this. Like, a lot of money in the good prize money, Ascot. And one thing that we definitely need to keep an eye on from an Irish racing perspective.
Yeah, there was a really interesting piece in the Irish Field last week about HRI's basically admitting that our prize money is becoming relative to Britain. Like, and you look at this race, if you can target these races properly in Britain, there is decent prize money, I think, and they've kind of gotten their act together. Really tricky race, JD. You have the 9 runners for each way players.
2 years ago, I tipped Helton on the show and it won at, at 17-2, right? For Dan Skelton at Newbury, the Greatwood Gold Cup. And he's only £4 higher than winning that. Now, obviously, he's been in and out, but he's got a £7 claimer on board. I think Heltonham could be maybe one. He needs to jump better, but one not to discount at a price. I'm just going through the prices here at the 220 at Ascot on Saturday.
Well, he's 9-1 now, but he was definitely bigger than that.
He was. He's actually been backed. He's 11-1 with Hills, Heltonham each way. He's my selection.
Yeah, he's an interesting runner because he was 7-2 at Aintree and wasn't going badly. Harry Atkins has had, I think, 5 winners this season. Heltonham's a horse we know quite well on this show. Vincenzo was second to your old buddy Glenn Gooley at Cheltenham the last day.
Now heavily backed into twos.
And Jaguar was third, and Kim Rogue was fourth. It's very, very solid form. He's only a pound higher. Needs to finish out. Like, I wouldn't be too hard on him. I think Glenn Gooley probably got a very enterprising ride that day. Now he has finished second quite a bit, but I thought this was a difficult race, to be quite honest. Dan Skelton's Etalon as well beat Scarface the last day at Ascot, £5 higher, maybe a contender for the lead. And Jungle Boogie, God, he's 12 years of age at this stage. He's a horse that I wouldn't be writing off just yet as well.
Bit of money for him. Obviously, he's in injury issues, but ran very well in the Gold Cup behind Galopin de Chance when he won it a while back. Felicia Williams now trying it.
It may be 2 years since he won the big race in Tremor on New Year's Day, but he's only had four runs since, one of which he smashed Field Or. So he's 12 years of age, but I wouldn't rule him out. Tricky race and another old friend, Hitman. Plenty of popular horse in this race. I'm not sure it's a betting race for me.
Yeah, all the disco fans obviously beyond Jungle Boogie.
Indeed.
Hey, Doc, go to soft in places. The going for their meeting, the Peter Marsh Handicap Chase. It's got seven runners, 2 o'clock over 3 miles, 1.5 furlongs. You like this Meyer Town, you were telling me.
Yeah, we only have six runners now, so it's a bit frustrating from an each way perspective, but like it's now six runners, so it's a bit of a different race. Meyertown's an intriguing horse because the same connections, I can't really think of many Dylan Thomas horses that have done anything major over jumps, and he was obviously not supposed to be a National Hunt sire, but two of them were a High Seigneur, and Meyertown's the other, who won the Ultima off 127. Last year, when he probably lacked a bit of experience, I was just really struck just reading back today, JD, at the comments of Lucinda Russell, who was the actual trainer then rather than the co-trainer now. He's different to Corrick Rambler. He jumps so exuberantly. Corrick is just a different sort of horse. This is a phenomenal horse, right? Now, she said, I knew he was phenomenally well handicapped. So it was phenomenal was the word for Lucinda that day. And he did look phenomenally well handicapped. He was 4-1 in the old Hennessy at Newbury. He's very, very likable. He failed that day, but he's very likable. He just kind of gallops onto the front, and if there's pace pressure here, I don't think it's going to be a major problem.
Royal Pagai will surely go out in front.
Yeah, Royal Pagai won the race in 2022, 2023, but has always been essentially better on softer ground. And he's obviously 12 now, but I like Meyertown here. I feel he was 4-1 the last day. This is a lot weaker race, and he's 2-1, and maybe have a small bet in him for the Gold Cup. Just a small bet, because he likes
Sheldon.
Mentioned
him in connection with the Gold Cup. If he's going to be in the Gold Cup, surely he should be winning this. That said, Confusion is going the right way. He has won at Newcastle and Weatherby this season. He's progressive. The ground is no issue. I think he's a strong contender as well, Confusion.
And they were both probably... He probably had a similar rating early in the season than Meyertown had last year. And he's well capable of... He's well entitled to run well in this race. He's actually been very well backed as well, I see. But Meyertown... For me, I just like the way he goes about his business. The fall of the last year was kind of one of them things.
Meyertown, Johnny Ward selection for the Peter Marsh Chase at Haydock.
Johnny, who as well, obviously, has to be given a big mention. His form when third to Deep Cave. I just always worry with a horse like this. Is his main aim this season, Cheltenham?
Well, also, he's only got one win and 8 chase starts. Mm. So from a statistical point of view, it might be difficult.
And at Cheltenham, really, I kind of still don't know how he didn't win. So I think you're not far off there.
Yeah, Il Est Temps, well, maybe up the hill there might be a bit of metal issues with his attitude. But Il Est Temps is the big one, really, from an Irish perspective, to follow tomorrow, folks, at Ascot in the Clarence House Chase, the Grade 1 Winnie Mullen sending him over against the home team in the UK Saturday.
The first race, briefly, JD, it's a four-year-old hurdle, but Genealogies is a 33-1 chance. Dennis Hogan and Justin Carty. Now, maybe tomorrow's not the day for him in terms of what they're expecting off him. He should not be 33-1. He was 8th at Leopardstown, beating 12 lengths in a strong maiden hurdle. He's a good horse for Aidan O'Brien, and he wasn't really knocked about at Leopardstown. Shouldn't be that price. If he's that sort of price at the off, you probably know your face, because he might need a bit more experience. But on form, he's not a 33-1 chance.
Genealogy in the 12:25 at Ascot on Saturday. Worth a look each way on the Racing Pod. So we have also got cards on Sunday at Thurles and Windsor. See, there's a nice tribute to Edward O'Grady with a race running in his honour and Willie's honour, Willie O'Grady, in the Thurles card, which is good to see him. Obviously, a legend of the game who sadly passed away in the last year, Edward O'Grady.
Edward was the king of Cheltenham
when we didn't have anything to sing about.
When I remember first horse I ever remember running at Cheltenham was back in front, who won the Supreme in 2003, I think. And I just loved that time because I'd just gotten into racing in college over the previous 12 months.
I tipped it on the radio, Johnny.
There you go. He was kind of the Irish banker. And
he was. Norman.
I happened to be. And there was something for me as well, because I was so new to racing. There was something about that camera angle of coming to the second last at Cheltenham with the jockey on the bridle. And I might have had like 5, maybe 10, is it euro or pounds on the horse at something like 2-1. Jeez, it meant the world to me. It meant I could eat that week or whatever, you know, if he won. But you know the buzz when they're...
Oh, yeah.
And that was the first race and I was hooked. Like
the Channel 4 coverage and
I think I watched it in the pub now, but yeah, I was definitely
I only realised recently, and I've been watching a lot of races back, some kind of nostalgia buzz at the moment, and I always thought the hooves and the fences was real.
Mm, yeah. It added to the experience. And like when you think of McCririck and Frankham and the late Alistair Down, two of them passed away now. Like they were just, it was compelling TV. And for me, who didn't know anything about it.
But it was entertainment
as well.
It was
so entertaining. Yeah. And it was also like Ireland was a bit of, you know, the upstart, but obviously wasn't going to win that many races. It was a different time. And that's why I think Cheltenham this year, no odds on favourites at the moment, I think, for any of the races. And Willie Mullins not going to dominate necessarily like other years. Ireland not necessarily going to dominate like other years. I think that's way better for racing.
I've done 23 of them and it is completely transformed. Mm. I mean, when I started going to Cheltenham, it was going to be getting 3 or 4 winners and the tricord would be coming into the winners enclosure.
Exactly.
And it would be just this massive buzz. And then it became routine and then became almost punches 10 away. It's been a remarkable transformation in 2 decades. But like even the first day at Cheltenham was just, I stayed in Bristol and I had to go up and this is when I found a docket on the ground, a winning docket on the ground.
What year was that?
2002.
So who won the Supreme that year?
Like a Butterfly.
Oh, wow.
This was the day that changed my life in ways in that I tipped 3 winners on the radio my first ever day at Cheltenham, including Horla Loa in the champion hurdle at 10-1. Dean Gallagher wrote it.
Wow.
And I got a lucky break. And then they said, okay, do you want to keep on doing this?
It's mad, isn't it? That's a sliding doors moment.
A sliding doors moment.
Look at us now.
Because the Bushkeeper won the... I think they had the Kim Ewer or something on the first day because it was only 3 days.
Mm.
And Be My Natives never won at Cheltenham. It was called the Hill Detector, the sire. And it was actually a Be My Native and it was one of the exceptions that won it. But it was Flagship Bibaratas won the champion chase that year and then Best Mate won the Gold Cup.
Do you know, like, there's so much negativity around like betting and racing and all of that at times and stuff like that. It's just the memory and the happiness that brings you thinking of the luck you had that day and the people you met.
It was a look to say, well, you got credibility.
Mm. People are ringing me as well about, say, preview nights over the last, like, and normally I'm like, oh, this year, I think the buzz is back a bit for Cheltenham.
Well, the buzz is back because you feel there's a degree of competition now and the home team are getting their act together a bit more.
And even our own trainer's title, and certainly the jockey's title, is very, very open. The trainer's title is going to be really intriguing, I think, this year. And Gordon Elliott says he doesn't have a chance, but he probably doesn't have a massive chance, but he has a chance. And people want... you know, people want Jimmy Mangan to have a good horse. People want
Jeopardy in competition.
Yeah.
And a new story and a fresh story.
Exactly. And like Willie is as good an ambassador for the game as you will get. But like Kilkenny were a great ambassador. People didn't want him to win all the time though.
Well, in 2015, there's a Bart Simpson meme where he's just slumped in the chair in black and white. And I think after Kilkenny won in 2015, the hurling, it was like, the phrase was, you go to mass and everybody shakes hands and they go home again. Kilkenny haven't won an All-Ireland since.
Mm. It's mad how it changes.
So there's never certainty in anything.
Mad
in
how
life.
It changes. But yeah, that year in 2022, nearly 24 years ago now, JD.
2002, yeah.
2002, rather.
Yeah, nearly 24 years. Cheltenham was a very different place. So Thurles on Sunday, we have a Mayor's Novice Chase, 6 runners at 2:15 over 2.5 miles. I mean, Jade Grugy surely will win this. She's yet to click over fences, but she ran well over this type of trip behind the Big Westerner last time, and after winning that Grade 1 race at Punchestown, surely she's going to win this.
I didn't have many bets at Christmas. I kind of find it a bit mad, and the way I bet, like I bet on the show more so than and anyway, the first day I think I tipped 11 horses on Racing TV, and the first 6 had all been beaten, and a Shamrock Rovers fan texted me for would I give him a tip, and I gave him basically the next 5 and they all won, right? But I didn't back
any prices in them?
Like say...
What would the 5-fold have done? Life-changing?
Yeah, it would have been life-changing, but like it's all, well, if my granny had, you know, yeah, and yeah, all that. Yeah. It is what it is, but the next day I did have 2 bets. The first one was Marine Nationale.
Yeah.
And I'm still not sure what happened because I don't like the camera work there. But the happily or otherwise, and this is always tricky for a punter, the very next race was the Big Westerner against Jay DeGruji. And the Big Westerner was on the drift, and I fancied the Big Westerner. But I backed her anyway, and the Big Westerner won. And even from the perspective of the fact that I had a good bet in the horse, it was a great race to watch. It was just a great race to watch. On that form, Jay DeGruji is miles ahead of these. And now she has Therese to beat, who's stablemate of the Big Westerner. But she won't be. I can't see her troubling Jay DeGruji, who looks a good thing. So that's the third leg of. Well, we'll talk about that later. But yeah.
The other race to look at at Turles on Sunday is the Horse and Jockey Hotel Chase Grade 2. Appreciate it. Won the race last year. Brilliant servant. 12 years of age now. 5 years ago since he won the Supreme Novices Hurdle? His age might not stop him because he had an encouraging return behind Afridale Fury in a seasonal reappearance. We know what Noel Mead's horse would subsequently do. And Hercule Desai is out of form. Mark Walsh prefers Gentleman to Me. But once again, he's 10 now and a bit of a no-show in recent runs. James de Burleigh is a horse of flatters to deceive. Look, Monbeck Park is a handicap prospect, really. But he did actually run well in the Paddy Power chase at Leopardstown for a long way. So he's not completely out of it, but...
No, he
could be a massive price, and he could outrun his odds.
He's a massive looker anyway. If you ever go racing JD and you see him, he's just one of those horses that would just take your eye. And I can't remember why he wasn't sold when he was, you know, this really kind of hyped horse earlier on in his career. A bit like Salem, a bit like Facile Mode, another walk in the park, who sadly passed away recently. But Monbeg Park now finds himself with Jack Foley, who's just started off training, and he's probably the apple of his eye. Like, he's second to Hartwood, and even that run to Paddy Power. He's not a no-hoper in this race, and how Jordan Gainford rides the race will be interesting. I only realised the other day, if you're on the HRI declaration site, it tells you how many trainers have a runner in the race as you're declaring. So, like, it'll tell you there are 5 declared at this stage, number of trainers. In this case, if Jack Foley and Jack Foley were the last person to declare, would it be number of runners, 4, number of trainers, 1, because Willie Mullins has them all. So you have to, maybe you decide then, sure, I have to run the horse. But in any event, Monbeg Park is a lively contender in this race. I'm like you, appreciate it. He won the race last year. He won't be the same price again. He's 12 years of age. We don't have the prices. I'm not sure if it's a betting race, but he probably is hard enough to oppose.
Would you oppose Protector Ash in this Fleur de Lis chase at Windsor on Sunday, 3 o'clock, 2 miles, 6 furlongs, won by 23 lengths last year, 11 years of age now?
No, and in fact, I thought his odds, maybe should have put this into my bet, but I found this horse very, very hard to oppose in this race. He was 100-30 in the race last year, but Windsor, obviously, was that Windsor's first season back as a jumps track? So
yeah, strange track.
It's a strange track. He likes it. He's rated 165. He has had a wind up, but I actually couldn't see what was going to beat him here, and he's just a very, very straightforward horse. Second to John Bond, 2 runs back, started the season then with that run at Cheltenham, and just the liking for this track, he bolted up in the race last year. I don't see why he shouldn't win it again this year.
Well, Handstands has beaten Django Bay in his career, has had wind surgery, might be a horse that needs a bit of space between his races, and Matata won over 2.5 miles to Cheltenham on New Year's Day, and that puts him in with maybe a squeak here. I mean, he won his point, he's been campaigned over 2 miles, but JJ Slevin is going over to ride him.
Yeah, and he's the kind of the trip aspect there, and JJ going over to ride him. He's definitely, for me, he's the most likely danger. Handstands, another horse that'll wind up. At least they show this in Britain. Very disappointed the last year behind Grey Dawning. But I just feel this is probably sort of Protector Ash. If you're Dan Skelton, you're thinking, well, what am I really going for this season? He didn't run over the Christmas, so I'd say they were aiming for this race. It makes perfect sense. He won it by 23 lengths last year on what'll probably be similar ground.
Now, remember, folks, we've been talking on the show about the William Hill Each Way Extra Challenge series, covering 50 races at 28 meetings across 39 Irish tracks in the National Hunt season, a prize fund of €135,000. The series sees points allocated per qualifying race to trainers and jockeys from the 1st to the 7th in the table, with an overall table to decide the prize winners next April. And any trainer is eligible to run horses in these races. The trainer prize fund is limited to trainers with fewer than 50 winners in the last 2 seasons in either code. The winning trainer will receive €50,000, prizes down to 10th. And the top 3 riders and stable staff will receive 10,000, 5,000 and 2,500 euro respectively. Any rider who qualifies for a rides for a qualifying trainer will have a bonus points allocated. The series is supported by the Irish Racehorse Trainers Association, the Irish Jockeys Association and the Irish Stable Staff Association. The leaderboard says that Philip Rothwell is flying out in front, well clear in the training standings. But Daniel King is now top of the jockey table, Daniel King.
I mentioned Daniel there in relation to Conor and their brothers. Conor is a very good rider, still rides out of Paddy Toomey's, but Wade got the better of him. But the series has done well. It's just been something fresh. Like, and I'd laud the Irish Racehorse Trainers Association as well for bringing something in and giving, I suppose, a bit like the League Cup for other teams that, like, you know, maybe aren't going to win the league. It's just something to keep you interested. And Tony Martin's a big fan of Daniel, really, really big fan. He's a quality rider. I think Tony's a great judge of a horse. He always knew, you know, when Tony Martin booked Davy Russell or Ruby Walsh or Paul Carberry, that he liked one. And Daniel King's his kind of go-to man now.
Alex Dunn from William Hill is on the line. How are you, Alex?
Yeah, very well, thanks, guys. How are you?
Not too bad, thanks. So the Clarence House Chase, the Grade 1 at Ascot, the feature race this weekend. Anything market-wise that we should know?
Well, Ilete Tom's favourite, and that's understandable, 8-13, but in truth, he's on the drift, which sounds odd when you're talking about such a heavy odds on shot. But John Bonn in there at 4-1, 13-2 for Thislask, and Gidley Park is 7-1. I actually think those two outsiders could play a part if they are at their best, and Thislask certainly has been so far this season. And Gidley Park, we know, has had health issues in the past, but when he's fit and firing, he's really, really good as well. So for all that Ilete Tom is going to go off favourite, he's pretty weak, and as far as we're concerned from a trading perspective, currently the only winner in the book, because at a working man's price, people are more likely to take a chance on one or two of the others. And that, of course, includes John Bonn, who's 4-1, which many will see as a backable price, but I'd like to see him piece it all together before I'm willing to back him again, put it that way.
That is a mad thing, Alex, isn't it, about bookmaking? People say, oh, the favourite won again, terrible result of the bookmakers. People, and certainly on track, people do not want to back odds on shot in win bets.
No, and that's the thing. I think in accumulators, people will want to put one, two, three, whatever, however many of these together, and that's fine. But in terms of a one-off race, put it this way, if you presented me with that race, I'd go, well, Ilete Tom's the likeliest winner, certainly, but as a single, I'd probably rather look elsewhere. There's only the four runners, so you've not got the breadth of markets that maybe you'd have on a bigger race. It's a tricky one, but I actually think all four of them are really intriguing runners, and I'm looking forward to seeing how that plays out. But right now, Ilete Tom still favourite, and he's going to go off favourite, but a little easier to back.
Have you got a Biggest Loser in the book, Alex, elsewhere?
We've got a few through the course the on Saturday, at least, who have attracted just bits and pieces of support. I don't know about Biggest Loser currently, but if we look at the 220 at Ascot, I thought that was an intriguing race, because to start with, I looked at that and thought, is this a veterans race? Have they just called it the wrong thing? But then, no, there's a 7-year-old in there and an 8-year-old. But the bulk of them are 10, 11-year-olds, and there's a 12-year-old in there as well. It is one of the 12-year-olds who's been nibbled at. Still the outside of the field, Jungle Boogie, but 14-1 now from 22s. And it's just an interesting runner on account of, did manage to win here last season, has a good record right-handed, and comparative to age, hasn't actually had all that much racing. So that one's been nibbled at. And in the same race, Heltnam has also been nibbled at, who is one of the younger runners in the field. I mean, you'd have been waiting a while to find a race that he's going to win this season, because his back has always come in their droves, and he hasn't managed to piece it all together just yet. But yeah, they're the two so far at big prices in that race, at least, which is one of the more competitive ones of the day, who have been back. Vincenzo is still fairly strong at 15-8 at the head of affairs for that race.
Yeah. Then we have the Peter Marsh Chase at Haydock as well. You've got Myertown, who's Johnny's pick, and Confusion. They're really the top two. It might be a surprise if both of them are beaten.
Yeah, it's a strange sort of time of year, because obviously we had the William Hill Classic Chase cancelled last week at Warwick because of the frost. So Myertown was going to go for that race and would have been favourite. And obviously then connections have to pivot and see where they fancy going. I think it's a good opportunity for Myertown. This 2-1 does have to jump well, which hasn't always been the case, but I do like the horse. 9-4 Confusion, Johnny Who 100-30, Royal Pagai is 15-2, 11-1 for Richmond Lake, and Imperial Saint is 18-1. Just a couple of slightly bigger prices to mention. As a trading view on the race, the traders are against Royal Pagai. I know punters will come for Royal Pagai. I wouldn't be shocked to see him go off a bit shorter, but I think the trainers are quite keen to lay him in this race. There have been nibbles for Imperial Saint, who is still the outsider at 18-1. I do like that horse. I think he's got a fair bit of ability, but he's going to have to step up to beat the likes of Myertown, who I think it's got an entry in the Gold Cup, and that could be indicative of where they see this horse ending up rather than running in handicaps.
I'm just looking at on the Gold Cup betting here as well, because if you think the picture is a little bit smudged, which I suppose it probably is, to be fair, he's 66s with William Hill. So if you want to assume that, and you should never assume, but if you assume he wins tomorrow, loves it around Cheltenham, could get a freebie. He could be trading at 5-1 after a few fences. He's 66s for the Gold Cup, in which Galloping de Champ is favourite. And obviously he's a horse who showed his vulnerabilities last year, but cracking Gold Cup picture.
I was on with Tom last week, Johnny, because you were off on a well-deserved break, and
I'm not sure about the well-deserved bit, but
well,
I'm certainly
we
not
picked
here,
five horses each for Cheltenham, whether they'll run or not. We tried to maybe pick horses that might turn up and do well, obviously with the proviso that it is, you know, for small stakes. But Tom picked Hazy Couleur at 14s. I picked Galopin. I think Galopin's chance 6-1 is a crack of price for the Gold Cup each way, back to nothing.
Don't agree at all.
Do you have a view on this, Alex, at the moment?
It's no, is the short answer, but at the same time, from a betting perspective, when I look at that race, I don't really know what to make of so many of them yet. And in my head, I've sort of gone, that's all right, because we're still ages away from the Gold Cup. And you look and you go, hang on, Cheltenham's not that far away, actually. I mean, Galopin 6-1, Django Bay 7s, another way you're thinking 7s, the Jukebox Man 8s, Gaelic Warrior 10s, Grey Dawning 12s. I don't know. Firstly, I don't know who's going to turn up and in what shape they're going to turn up. But I do think Galopin each way at sixes makes sense, because he's the one that you know will turn up, and it just feels like a little bit of a, not a disrespectful price about the horse, but I can see him bouncing back, and there are question marks about one or two of the others. If we do get that field lining up, though, what a race in prospect. But I just hope that we see more of them turn up than not.
Only fact of file, obviously, isn't left in the race, won't, but Alex said there, I don't know who's going to show up or what shape they're going to show up in. That is a bit like a Cheltenham preview night. And when you bring up the Gold Cup now at a Cheltenham preview night this year, this is just cracking stuff. I mean, you could have 10 people in the audience having 10 different horses for the race.
Why are you against Galopin?
Because I just think it's really difficult to come back. He was floored in the race last year. Like, floored.
Put a line through it.
No, but why? He was weak in the betting on the day.
It just might have been not his day, right?
Was beaten at Leopardstown. In a race in which I know the way you're thinking,
first run of the season.
Didn't really stop him before in terms of Leopardstown anyway. He was always pretty much unbeaten.
Turned up with the John Durkin.
Really hard to come back.
Turned up with the John Durkin in previous years. And
yeah, John Durkin, in fairness, short trip.
Hasn't delivered.
I know the way you're thinking for me is still the one, but I can see why you'd have doubts.
He's flopped at Punchestown compared to his Gold Cup form when he's been possibly feeling the exertions of a long season. Faster Slow's had his number a couple of times. Turned up Punchestown last season, won by 22 lengths. It's a horse of a lifetime. As Ruby Walters said, the best chaser we've had in this country since Arkle. Has won 11 grade ones. And you're talking about the horse of a lifetime. You look at Denman and Call a Star, the way they turn up in their old ages and performed in Gold Cups. I think there's only one day that matters, and that's March the 13th.
Is it 8 weeks today? 13th it is. 8 weeks today.
Got up on the chance, 6-1 for the Gold Cup. He will not be 6-1 after the Irish Gold Cup at Leopardstown next month.
Alex, sorry, who's your tip in the Gold Cup at the moment then?
I'm tempted to agree that 6-1 each way on a favourite in a race like that is the most tempting. That is the way that I'd have to play it. What I do think is interesting, I was talking to, I was going to call him AP there, Sir AP McCoy to most of us. He was talking about Iron Maximus, who's 25-1 for the Gold Cup.
There you go.
That horse has got loads of ability. I just don't know if it's going to be Gold Cup or Grand National. They could try both, obviously, but I'm wary of Iron Maximus. Wherever he does turn up, I think he will. Well, he already has been backed. He was 40-1 a couple of weeks ago for the Gold Cup. He ran so well over Christmas that I want to be with him. I just don't know in which race yet.
Yeah.
Whether he's good enough, I don't know, but all the right people are talking about Iron Maximus as being one to don't sleep on him, don't forget about him. And yeah, he's an interesting one wherever he goes.
Okay, time for our charity bet. Johnny Ward, you got €50 on the nose or 25 each way. What are you going to do this week?
Plenty of options, but I'm going to go for a treble. Now, I don't think we've prices on the last of them, but it's Ilete Tomps in the Clarence House, Myertown. give or take around 2-1, and Jay DeGruji then. Now, Jay DeGruji is going to have to be at SP, but I don't really mind going on to SP on that if you can just back the other two onto it. So that should be a nice interest bet to get you through Saturday and Sunday, presuming they all win.
So 3:30 on Saturday, Ile Jetons in the Clarence House Chase is the first leg of Johnny's Treble. The second leg in the 2 o'clock at Haylock on Saturday is Myertown, and the third leg at Thurles on Sunday in the 2:15 is Jade de Grugy. Probably difficult to get a price in this, Alex, at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, just because that last leg isn't there currently. But yeah, 8-13 and 2 is the two legs that are standing at present. Be interesting to see when we do price that Mares Novice up at Thurles, how short Jade de Grugy is. But you would expect her to go on and win that one. And yeah, I'm in full agreement. I quite like the other two as well.
There we go.
The price on Ile Jetons we've spoken about as a single, no, but he is far and away the likeliest winner of the Clarence House, isn't he?
Great minds think alike, Alex Dunn and Johnny Ward. We have Ile Jetons, Myertown and Jay DeGruji. Johnny Ward's treble this week is Charlie Bet on the Racing Pod 50 on the nose. Alex, thank you.
Cheers, thank you.
And Johnny Ward, thanks so much.
Cheers, JD. Enjoy the weekend.
Speak to you soon.
The Racing Pod.
On Off The Ball.
With William Hill. 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.